Welcome to Day Zero of Day 4, March 12th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkin.
And I'm Dan Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a decent week this week of news. Not really a ton of big things happening.
Mm-hmm.
We did have the Capcom Spotlight event that had some dates for some of their games coming up. Mm. But yeah, really not a ton of big news this week.
Nope.
But we do have some demos you can check out that are out now.
Mm-hmm.
We got an idea of what's coming to Game Pass here for the next week or so. And a few other dates here and there. Yeah. So, but yeah, before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I've been playing Dead Cells, Return to Castlevania.
Mm-hmm.
The new DLC that is out now for, I believe, every platform. It's $10 to go with the game. Mm-hmm. They do have bundles with the game and just the Castlevania DLC, which is essentially what I got on Steam because I wanted to kind of see how they integrate it in the game itself through that. So I ended up managing, I think it's on sale right now on Steam for maybe $22, $23. Mm-hmm. But I managed to get codes for the game and the Castlevania DLC for just under $20 total. So that worked out for me. Yeah, the big thing is that the Castlevania DLC requires you to, and it may be true for all the DLC, you have to get through at least two runs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where it integrates a number of its mechanics into the game as you get, you know, the starting area expanded a bit. With each run, that kind of stuff. Though I think by the second or maybe my third run, as I was trying to figure out how to get it started, I managed to beat one of the bosses in the main game, the one on the bridge, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't having too much trouble, you know, doing well with it. But yeah, basically, I had to look it up. Just to double check, and basically after you get at least two runs in, it's when you start a new run, it'll throw, it'll have like a bunch of bats swarm across the screen,
mm-hmm.
tell you like, hey, this is going now. And as you're exploring that initial area in the prisons, you find stairs, which is a new thing that's not in that area normally.
Mm-hmm. That
is sort of one of those extra branches off to a new area, which you find Richter Belmont there, who tells you, you know, there's some shit going on in Castlevania, and they need your help, because he's useless now, I guess, as a result of this. But yeah, you go to, I guess, two areas they've added to the game, two biomes. There's the castle outskirts, and then there's Dracula's castle proper, that are kind of big areas to explore. The outskirts is not that big, but the inside of the castle is pretty expansive. I managed to off stream get through a good run of that, kind of looking in every nook and cranny. I was trying to get as much as I could out of it. But as you're playing in those two areas, you'll get blueprints for items that are, you know, Castlevania weapons. I have the Holy Cross that you can throw out as like a boomerang type of weapon that works out pretty well. What else do I have? I have, I think there's a couple others I have, but they're all, I think it's like 14 or 15 weapons you can unlock. But also part of the trick is you have to get the blueprint and get out of the level. So if you fuck up, you lose progress in that sense, but you're always making progress as you, the nice thing is, at least with going to the Castlevania area, is you can pretty easily get there in under 2 minutes, so that when you get to the first sort of base between the stages, you'll have the first door unlocked, which gives you a number of souls and gold and a choice of a new weapon to pick from as sort of a bonus thing. As if you play Dead Cells, when you get to, when you finish a level and you go into that little base area between it, you get to do upgrades and such. That is has like two doors initially. They're like, oh, did you get to here and under the time limit for that stuff? Or I think it's getting kills without getting hit, a streak of that. And again, either or both, you get a door to open that gives you various bonuses. For the Castlevania stuff, it's all a lot of fun stuff. I've lost a number of things, but once I got my good run through the castle, you go through the base area again. And then as you're about to leave, there's like a new area that shows up that then the Grim Reaper pulled me out to do a boss fight with him. And I managed to beat him pretty easily on that first run. I did have a good bow that had a bonus thing that causes toxic clouds to form around them so that he would constantly get poisoned as I hit him with the bow and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's really neat. And along the way, you get options in the settings that allow you to switch the soundtrack for the game from either the default Dead Cells or the 8-bit Dead Cells soundtracks to one that's full of Castlevania music, as well as some original stuff inspired by Castlevania music. So there's a lot of cool stuff in there. So that's probably worth it on its own, since this is a game that has heavily been inspired by Castlevania, as they've been upfront about that, being inspired by the other big indie roguelikes, as well as the Castlevania Symphony of the Night is a big part of their inspiration. And they managed to do well enough that Konami allowed them to, bring that Castlevania stuff into Dead Cells proper, which is really cool to see. Definitely worth checking out if you have Dead Cells. If not, it's on sale most everywhere, and I think it's on Game Pass and PlayStation Plus Extra. If you have not checked it out in the first place, you can get those and the DLC if you want. But yeah, it's always been a really cool game and definitely worth checking out. So there you go for that. Let's see. Also played Kart Rider Drift, which is one of the new releases this week, which is a free-to-play kart racing game that's on PlayStation, Xbox, PC, and mobile. Basically every platform that Mario Kart is not on. And this is from Nacon, the publisher. I forget who the developer is, but they had a beta for this last year, and it's pretty much the same kind of game since then. They haven't made any real big changes. It's a fairly kind of bland, stylistically, kart racing game that is multiplayer-focused. There's some single-player, like, challenge stuff that is necessary to do for some of the competitive modes. But other than that, you don't really have to engage with that stuff. It's all just very basic challenges that, if you want to brush up on some of your skills, you can do that. Other ones are kind of just pure, like, minigame stuff. But yeah, the action itself, the game itself is sort of split into two different types of races. There's item races, which are the ones with all the power-ups and such that you can use that have mostly all sort of analogs for the various iconic Mario Kart, items, red shells and blue shells and all that kind of stuff. Even the big sort of lightning thing that it doesn't shrink people, but it does stop them for a good bit. So there's a lot of stuff there. I don't think there's anything that's maybe different. There is a magnet that lets you sort of grab onto somebody and sort of zip yourself much faster up the field, that kind of stuff. But there's also, shields to block attacks if you're up near the front as people are attacking you, that kind of stuff. Though the big, like, blue shell type of attack requires a specific item for that instead of the shield to block it. So they do a lot of that kind of stuff. That is pretty neat. The other mode is the speed mode, where you're just basically racing around the track and getting a boost power up every so often for the races, and that gets you a speed upgrade, essentially. So there's that. They have single or solo variants, duo variants, and four-person variants. It's always in a field of eight, so it's basically just splitting them up into teams. I think the speed one, it's whoever gets finished first. Item might be based on... that might also be who gets first. I'm not sure about that, but I did pretty well. But yeah, they also have variants for just playing AI if you just want to feel good and win races against dumb AI. You can have them only fill races with the racers, which might risk, you know, not having a full field. But then there's one that's called racers and AI, which is fills in any holes if it needs to, but I didn't have any problem filling up a full eight team or eight person field. Though I did have some repeats of people, and I didn't see any way to block people that had just, that were very annoying, had, you know, lewd names, that kind of stuff. But yeah, being free to play, this game has, you know, a battle pass to it, with free and paid paths. It's only like $5 for the season for that, so it's not too pricey. But otherwise, it's not, you're not really getting too much out of it. It's just cosmetics, and none of these characters are all that interesting looking to be worth spending money on it, unless you're just really into it. And sort of in that vein of, you know, free to play mobile style, it has tons of different areas to get challenges and daily login bonuses and all that kind of stuff. For just logging in for the launch, I got like a cart that was Porsche themed, I think, and a couple others. So the vehicles are not stat based, though. If you are on PlayStation Plus, there's a free PS Plus package. You bunch of the coins, the gold coins, not the paid currency, that lets you upgrade your any cart you want twice, which then gives you skill points that you can put into its stats. Which you can put it all into its speed and acceleration to maximize that, and that'll get you going in races so you have the best possible chance to you know, win races or at least keep up and not get trounced every time. So it's pretty solid, but nothing amazing to it. So that's Kart Rider Drift. Then there's Minecraft Dungeons. It's on PlayStation Plus Essential now. I jumped into it to see kind of how it's evolved a bit since the launch a few years ago, and it hasn't really changed too much. A lot of the same style of not really huge differences in loot or anything like that. It's all, you get a lot of like minimal improvements in loot drops, that kind of stuff. It just kind of makes it feel like, you know, ready to just break down anything you get that isn't, you know, something unique. So I was looking around its alternate modes they have in there, and they got a tower that challenges you to get through, you know, X amount of floors, with boss floors every once in a while. And as you start that, you start without any of your loot. So you start with some basic items to start. And as you finish each stage, each floor, you get, you know, a random item you can pick from, you know, the handful they offer you. And so you're kind of building out an arsenal of that stuff as you go up to the top. I managed to do pretty well up until the final floor with the final boss, and got trounced there because I guess my loadout was not great for that particular boss. I don't know if it's a random boss each time or what, but it was just one that was constantly spawning, you know, adds to it. So that was just kind of annoying. And the other annoying thing is you can jump into that anytime as far as I could see. So I ran into a number of the floors were based on biomes that I had not been in, like the underwater stages where you have, you know, to keep your air meter filled up, that kind of stuff. That I had, I figured that part out, but they had these like separate areas to jump between that I did not figure out. Use the like dodge roll to jump across, because I had not had to do that in any of the stages up to that point. So there's that thing. And they also have some daily missions, stuff that you do for some extra XP and loot drop stuff. Nothing really too challenging about it, but it's just the stages take like an hour plus to go through if you're being thorough. If you're just mainlining them, probably get a little bit less than that, but it's a lot of game to go through for a minimal increase in loot stuff. They don't drop a ton of the tower where I saw a lot of the more wild stuff in there. That was pretty cool to see. But yeah, playing through the regular stages, it's not as big of a drop there for that stuff. So yeah, that was kind of the, still not changing my mind too much on playing that, but at least with the, at some point in the recent past, they have added the ability to upload characters to the cloud so that you can pull them down on other platforms. So that was nice to pull in my Xbox character and not have to start completely from scratch on that. So that was at least the one nice thing that I saw that was new. So there's that, and still playing through Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line. I have completed up to Final Fantasy X. At this point, I have 11, 12, 13, and 15 to go, and 11's been pretty nice to play through because I played a bunch of that back in the day, and that game had a lot of great music in it. So that's been fun. As I work my way through getting my Final Fantasy VII crew to star rank number 2. Right now I'm about 60 some thousand XP away, and that's going to take a while. So that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I am playing more Atomic Heart, and you know, the game is fun. The gameplay is good. The level design and the environmental design and everything is really great, but I gotta tell you, if there is one thing about this game I don't like, it's the fact that the guy that you're playing just never shuts the hell up. Ever. He's always doing these stupid little one-liners, and you know, he's constantly cursing, and it's, you know, it's, don't get me wrong, I'm not some prude or anything who has problems with cursing. It's just, it's every other damn sentence. Even in places where it's just not called for at all. And then he's also got his stupid little crispy critters sort of running sort of phrase of his that he's always using. And it's just, it's annoying. It's very annoying. And, you know, Chris asked me this when we were doing Let's Weekend. He's like, is it like Duke Nukem? It's not really like Duke Nukem, because at least with Duke Nukem, in spite of how like juvenile his sense of humor is, he's at least funny on occasion. But this guy is just annoying. Just, he is. But the other thing about it that I will, this was somebody else who, there's a YouTuber I like who specializes in like Soviet history and Soviet studies. And she played the game, and one of the things she brought up was the fact that for a game that's supposed to take place in the Soviet Union, there is a surprising lack of women in it. Like, that's not to say there are no women in it. Like, there are, like, you know, there are NPCs that you'll come across that are women. There's one major character you'll come in contact with who's a woman as well. And, of course, there's the ballerina twins. But the thing is, all of them are very, like, they don't really have much going for them. They're either props to be used, like the NPC characters. They're, or they exist solely to be the romantic interest of the protagonist, which is the other main character I talked about, or they're just sort of overly sexualized and then they just call it a day. Like, again, the ballerina twins. It's just weird, and, you know, it shows that it's a game that takes place what is supposed to be the Soviet Union, but it's made with a modern Russian mindset. And it kind of shows, unfortunately. Otherwise, I mean, like, if you've got, you know, Game Pass like I do, give it a shot. You know, in spite of what I say, it's still pretty fun and very entertaining. And the other game that I've been playing is Trails of Azure. And, well, Trails to Azure. And I guess, yeah, me and Danrip have also been playing it. So, Dan, you want to go ahead and start talking about it before we go now, since it's the only other thing you've got?
Yeah, sure, I might as well. This has been the main game I've been playing for the last couple weeks. And yeah, that this is also the reason why the podcast is going up a little later, because I didn't want to save it for next week. But yeah, so the game comes out Tuesday, which is obviously, you know, today when it goes up. And yeah, we've been waiting, like, how long, Brandon? Maybe 10 years for this game to come out?
Yeah, we got Trails from Zero, like, a few months ago. And then, you know, that, and, you know, Trails from Zero was good, but as far as Trails games go, it's actually on the short side. Like, even compared to, like, the first Trails in the Sky game, it's on the short side. It was good. Don't get us wrong. We really liked it, but short. It acts more like a prologue to what ends up being Trails to Azure. Yeah, we've been waiting on this game for, like, a decade, basically.
Exactly. Like, just to preface everything, like, yeah, we're huge fans of this series. We started with Trails in the Sky, which originally came out on PSP, but most of us got to play it through PC. And
yeah.
Then came Second Chapter, and then the Cold Steel games came out. And the Cold Steel games came out on PS3, 1 and 2. And this was Falcom's first attempt at getting into 3D RPGs.
Yeah.
And, like, the problem was, by that time, the PS4 was already out. So, like, yeah, these were games that were that looked aged, but as far as the way they felt, they're definitely up there with Persona and Final Fantasy as some of the best turn-based RPGs you'll ever play. The problem is, they're just not very accessible, because, as we mentioned, these games got their start on PSP. Who even has one anymore? And then, as I also mentioned, they're available on PC, but Brad is not playing them on a PC, because not everybody has a PC that's capable of playing, you know, games like these, even though they are pretty simple to run. But yeah, another part of the issue was that Exceed, which was the first American company to have the publishing rights to these games, did not have access to the Crossbell games, and Nisa did. So Nisa eventually took over with Trails of Cold Steel 3 and Part 4. And then we eventually got these Crossbell games, finally. And a big part of it was just, you know, the demand from the fans. A lot of people downloaded the Japanese versions of the game and downloaded the translations and went from there. And the reason why these were entirely necessary is due to the fact that both Trails from Zero and Trails to Azure took place around the same time as Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2.
Yeah.
All of these games take place in the same universe, and it pretty much is the precursor to a huge war going on. So, as Brandon said, Trails to Zero was a lot of world building, and as a result, it was a shorter game. And now that I'm playing Trails to Azure, it kind of feels the same way that Second Chapter did to the Trails in the Sky games. Like, Trails in the Sky was a good precursor and showing the world building for the Kingdom of Liberal. And it's the same thing here with the with Crossbell State, except that I didn't beat Trails to Azure yet. I am right at the end, and I can tell you that this game is not going to be 80 hours. It's probably going to be closer to 50. So it is a little bit of a shorter RPG. Just, I mean, 50 hours is not short by any means, but as far as Trails games go, it's pretty short. And one of my, I mean, I guess you could call it a criticism, is the fact that in Trails to Azure, you don't have, I mean, there isn't a whole lot of new places to explore. There are some, but for the most part, you've been to every city and every dungeon in the game already, and you're pretty much going through them again with chests in different places and things like that, which canonically makes no sense, but, you know, it is what it is there. But what, the main reason why this game is so revered is because it remains interesting from start to finish. Trails to Zero had a little bit of a slow burn, but this one, a lot like Trails of Cold Steel 2 and, Trails in the Sky SC, like, once it puts you in the action, it does not stop. I'm someone that enjoyed, Trails of Cold Steel 3 and 4, despite not playing these two games, and looking back, like, I really wish we had these games back then, because it would make it so much easier to appreciate what we played with Code Steel 3 port. But
it's a good thing about Trails, a good deal of Trails of Azure, they're basically front loading it with a whole lot of foreshadowing. fun fact, this is the first game where Chancellor Osborne actually makes an appearance. He shows up during the, you know, the
was he not in SC? I could have sworn he was sitting in SC, like just sitting down.
He was not in SC. I did not see him in SC. But he does show up here for the first time, and he's there because, you know, they're getting ready to do the big trade conference. And of course they just unveil the first true skyscraper on the Zamorian continent. So he's there to see that. Yeah, chapter 2.
Okay.
I'm still a little late. I've been playing it, but it's been a bit slow going, but yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, so he's there. And of course, because he's royal family, Prince Oliver shows up. And of course he uses both of his personas, his persona as the prince and of course his persona as the slightly annoying traveling minstrel. But
annoying in a good way, in all the good ways.
Yeah. He basically happens is that he gets the SSS and private meeting him. It's him and it's what's her name? The crown princess from Liberal.
Chloe.
Yeah.
Claudia.
Because he's telling them, basically there's probably going to be a bunch of terrorists that are gonna show up in Crossbell because on the one hand, over in Erebonia, there's basically a civil war that's been brewing. And if you played Cold Steel, you do know what happens with that civil war. It straight up boils over between the Noble faction and the Reform faction. And, of course, the Noble faction are the ones who want to keep the aristocratic status quo. And the Reform faction are under Chancellor Osborne. They want to create a more centralized authoritarian government. And, of course, Oliver is trying to create a third path, more or less, through the, what you eventually find out is that his third path plan is very much in that one particular class at that military academy that you end up playing in Trails of Cold Steel, where he ends up, you know, bringing together members of both commoner and noble descent together into a single class, which is something that is not done in that particular military academy, because even the academies are like, their respective dormitories are like built in such a way so that it shows like, these are the nobles, they're up on high on this hill, and here are the commoners. They live down in this little valley, you know? But
since you're in the conference chapter, have you gone to a point where you've, talk to the people that are there yet? Like, did you run into any familiar characters?
I actually have not had the actual thing has not started yet. I just got off the meeting with all these guys. The other thing is we find out what's happening in the Republic of Calvard, because a big part of the Trail series is this sort of political intrigue between the Republic, you know, which is for more or less a liberal democracy, and the Erebonian Empire, which is a aristocratic democracy, basically, sort of like, you know, Prussia, more or less. And Crossbell, of course, is caught right in the between them. And so, you know, they're constantly having power struggles between the two. But the thing in the Republic is that apparently, and I'm guessing this is also them sort of predicting what a lot of the next story arc, because the next games after Cold Steel make their way into the Republic for the first time.
Yes.
And the thing about the Republic is that it has a very sort of liberal immigration policy. So like there's a lot of like Eastern, which in this universe, it's essentially Chinese, more or less,
it's more feudal.
Yeah. Immigrated to Calvard and, you know, Calvard is a fairly cosmopolitan place, but there's this these ultra-nationalist, basically anti-immigrant terrorist groups that have started showing up in response. And the game makes it very clear that that is a bad thing, that, you know, the immigration policies of Calvard are actually a good thing and part of the reason why it's a strong country. But the idea is that both the reformists, there's like a, apparently there's like a reformist terrorist group, or not a terrorist group, but more like a noble oriented group. Like, I think it's what ends up becoming the Imperial Liberation Front later on. And apparently they are collaborating with some of these anti-immigrant terrorists from Calvard so that they can sort of have their mutual goals at this trade conference. And that's basically where I left off last night.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, just to, like, you know, not really go into too much in the weeds of the older game, but, like, just from where you're at, Brandon, as you expect, things are going to hit the fan, and it's just going to be even more intense from there. And then, like I said, as far as pacing goes, this game is probably unquestionably the best in the series, just as pacing. I'm not talking about the plot as a whole, but, like, this was what part of really pulled me in, as opposed to like Trails from Zero, which you reviewed, and I didn't review primarily because like I wasn't as pulled in as I am now. But anyway, just to go back into what makes Trails to Azure stand out from the rest of the series, as we mentioned, Trails from Zero really just set up the foundation. We learned who the SSS or the Special Support Section is. Like Brandon talked a lot about the political turmoil. But the funny thing is about this Crossbell games is that you're actually using the police. Or you're using a certain branch of the police. And this is this game's version of...
And the funny thing is, the reason you're using this... The first game more or less establishes that because they have the Bracer Guild there, and because of the overall political corruption, the actual police in Crossbell are basically useless.
Yeah, exactly. So, and like... When people think about the police there, they don't really respect them, and that's that was a good start to this game, because, like, you know, you're a part of the part of the police force, and you're basically just wannabe bracers, and eventually, you know, you get through Trails from Zero, and all of a sudden you have a lot more respect. In fact, you're working hand in hand with the Bracer Guild in order to get things done faster than pretty much everybody else in Crossbell. So there's that. You're also introduced to two new characters who are added to the SSS, one by transfer from another branch of the army, and then you also have somebody who was a little vindictive in the last game, but also knew more than he let on. Kind of like this game's Olivier, if anything, but it just delves much further than that, especially. But aside from that, what's new here is they have the burst system in battles. I don't know if you've gotten to that point, Brandon, but basically,
I've already gotten there.
Gotcha. Yeah, it allows you to give your party extra turns, as well as more power and opportunity to raise your CP gauge, which is used for their S breaks or limit breaks or most powerful attacks in the game. So it essentially allows you to brick the system even more. And the trail system has had pretty much a very broken system, but it's actually intentional, because when you play the game in nightmare mode, if you don't know how to like brick the game in that way, you're probably not going to succeed. So you know, if you're somebody that likes to play the hardest modes, this is a game that's definitely going to tread your way. That being said, I am playing the game on easy mode. So even though I'm saying like, yeah, this game took me 50 hours, it's probably because I didn't really struggle. Just because I know how long this game is going to be, or how long there's not a lot of time, because as we're going to talk about later, there's more Trails games coming this year. Yeah, my review of the game will probably go up late tonight, if not tomorrow, and it's gonna get a good review for me, unless like something breaks, and which I hope to God it doesn't, because I have read some issues of the PSP game breaking in certain times, and it hasn't happened to me yet. And I am playing on Switch, main reason being, you know, I just prefer games that look like this with the 32, you know, the old 2D style to they just travel better with me. And Brandon's playing it on PlayStation, but obviously not any more or less enjoyable. So that's pretty much it for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and one more thing.
Sure.
One of the things about these older Trails games is that because they were originally on a PSP, that means that, you know, your movement and your dialogue goes a little slow.
Oh, yes.
But fortunately, these newer versions have a speed up thing that you can do. If you just, there's a button specifically for it, speed up, and it goes twice as fast.
Yeah, this is something that NIS America has definitely added as a welcome addition. This is actually available in both of the Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 remakes. I don't remember if it's part of 3 or 4, but all of the 2D games have this turbo mode to eventually like play the game faster. And the best thing about it is it doesn't accelerate your clock. So you don't have to worry about any fake numbers going into your playtime.
Right.
But yeah, that's Trails to Azure. Not Tuesday. Get it.
Yep.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news.
Right.
First up, Xbox has announced the next week or so of Game Pass stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple things here for the past week. There is, let me see, Guilty Gear Strive for console and PC, the latest in the Guilty Gear series.
Yeah.
So there's more of that. They just announced the next couple of characters they were going to put in the game for people getting the DLC and all that. Let's see here.
Coming definitely to console. Try to see that because I've been wanting to Strive for a while, but I've just never gotten the time to be able to go and buy it. So,
yeah, there you go for that. They also have, let's see, on March 14th, Valheim for the console, Xbox consoles. So you can check that out. The sort of Norse mythology, you know, survival, crafting, creation game kind of thing there. That is a very weird style to it, but people seem to like it at least. So there you go for that. For March 16th, there's Sid Meier's Civilization VI for console and PC. That is the latest one. I think they're working on another one now, Civ 7, one would assume. This is the one that's for the first time in a series, they made one of the mainline Civ games on the consoles. It made it work pretty well. Took them a while. Probably should have done it with maybe 5, I think it was. Because I think the ones they put on console, Revolution, I think it was around the time of 4. So yeah, that's one that people should check out, especially if you just want to waste a bunch of time on a game that will absolutely let you do one more turn and then you realize that the sun is coming up because it's, you know, 7 or 8 in the morning. I just somehow wasted all night on that. So there's that. And then on March 21st for console and PC, there's Ni No Kuni 2, Revenant Kingdom, the Prince's Edition. This is the second game in that series. Does not have any work done by Studio Ghibli, but the team that did work on it, you know, basically copies that entire style from the first game over and makes, I believe this is a game that you can just do as much grinding and all that as you want to do in it. Spend a ton of time in it, maybe more than you have to, but there you go for that. More Ni No Kuni for your pleasure there.
Yeah, Ni No Kuni 2 was a good game. It just like does too much for its own good. And as you mentioned, Studio Ghibli had nothing to do with the animation this time, but that didn't really matter. But the one thing that I did miss, as opposed to the original game, was that Ni No Kuni 2 does not have any actual anime scenes in it. There are definitely the same cutscenes using the visual style, but the actual anime scenes aren't there.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much it for Game Pass. I'm trying to check what else is on here. Nothing really much, but yeah, there you go for that. We'll get up to the next story here. The PS5 firmware that has been in beta for the past month or so is finally out for everybody today, or as of now. That is the one that adds like 1440p support for VRR. They had Discord voice chat, so you had to do a little bit of work linking up your accounts, but from there you could kind of join voice chats on there from the PlayStation. So there's that. Let's see what else is on here. Yeah, they changed up the like front end tile that you start on that has like news and some of that stuff. They've changed that up a little bit. Now the game pages as well, when you go to start them, will show you sort of how much time you put into them from there directly, as well as your trophies and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go to your profile to look that up for each game. Yeah, as well, they've added enhancements for the game lists so that you can more easily sort the games when adding them. So that especially for PSVR and PSVR 2 games, that makes it easier to set up one of those for your VR games. And yeah, like some better support for migrating save data from PS4 to PS5 and PS5 to another PS5. That kind of stuff, as well as the ability to update your DualSense controllers wirelessly without having to hook them up. So that'll save time for some people. So yeah, some good stuff there for people to check out. Here we got three demos that you can check out. They've come out here in the past few days. There's one for Grim Grimoire Once More. For PS5, PS4, and Switch, you can check it out, and the save data will carry over. And so, yeah, that is the Vanillaware game that came out on the PS2. It was basically like a 2D RTS. It's gotten a bit of a remaster with some mechanic changes to make it work better for 2023.
Yeah, and generally just to work better for, you know, what's essentially a real something akin to a strategy RPG for modern consoles. But yeah, this is Vanillaware's very first game, and it has all the hallmarks that you expect of a Vanillaware game. It's got absolutely gorgeous art style. It's full of references and, well, the other stuff. And yeah, I'm definitely anticipating this because I've always wanted to play this. I never got the chance to when it first came out.
So yeah, there's that. Then we also have a demo for Bayonetta Origins, Cereza and the Lost Demon. That'll be out here this week on Friday, I believe. So you can check it out a bit early. And yeah, I think they said the save data will transfer over to the full game. It'll be interesting to see how people take to that game, because that is a game that does not look like it should be $60, but that's what they're charging for. But yeah, you can check out that demo. And yeah, then
it'll definitely be interesting to see, considering that, you know, obviously Bayonetta 3 sold pretty darn well. So
But yeah, also as part of the Capcom Spotlight event, they dropped the Resident Evil 4 demo, the chainsaw demo, as they call it, which I believe has the early part of the game, right up to the big fight with the villagers, especially the big chainsaw man. So that's one that people have been playing a lot. I have not had a chance to start it yet, but people seem to like it a lot. And so, yeah, that's no save transfer over, because I think this is changed up a bit from how it plays in the actual game. But there's no time limit on this, like some of the other Resident Evil demos have had. So you can play it as much as you want. And that game will be out next week. So yeah, there you go for that. Let's see here. Coming out, our first date here, Front Mission 2 Remake will be out on the Switch June 12th. They're finally have a date for that for $35.
So this is the sequel to the first Front Mission game. They made that remake, and it came out, I think it was early this year or it was later last year. I can't remember.
I think it was November.
And that game is really good, but it is also Like, it is a remake in graphic style. As far as the gameplay is concerned, it's basically the same thing, for better or for worse. This is a strategy game for the NES, as it was originally made. And now it's, well, it was for the Super Famicom, I think it was. But now it's modern now, and you can play it. And it's pretty good, actually. Just, you know, understand that when you're, you know, understand what you're getting into, I guess, is how to put it.
Yeah. So that'll be fun to see how people like that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this one was a PlayStation game.
Mm.
I think the first one was a Super Nintendo game.
Yeah.
But this one was the first one on the PlayStation.
Yep.
And it just never came over.
Yeah.
3 was the one that came over, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is Squaresoft logic from that point. It's like, who needs all of these? We'll just give them the ones that we like the best.
Mm-hmm.
Which worked out for Final Fantasy, where people went from 3 to 7 and were like, what? What happened here?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Then we got Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, also part of the Capcom Spotlights. They announced a date for that, June 30th.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. $30 for that. PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. If you pre-order it, you get 4 special backgrounds, as well as some music tracks you can listen to in the main menu.
Mm-hmm.
For that. But yeah, that's going to be... looks really great for that game that deserves it, because it's a fantastic and cool kind of puzzle adventure game.
Mm.
Where you play a detective that has been killed, but he uses his spirit to inhabit objects to affect the people around them and get them to do the things that he wants to save their lives and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they've adapted the game for controller play. They've added new languages that were not in the original, some new challenges and trophies, and improved menu and system features, and upgraded and enhanced the music and artwork too. So, yeah, that's what I'm excited to see here in June. So, yeah, there you go. That'll be a good summer game.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, also happening for the summer, Exoprimal, another part of the Capcom Spotlight event. They announced that this game will be coming to, PlayStation, Xbox, and PC on July 14th. That'll be a $60 game. It'll also be on Game Pass as well. And then we'll have an open beta this weekend coming up from the 17th to the 19th. So you can check it out early to see how this goes. But yeah, I would not be surprised by this game going the way of Rainbow Six Extraction. And just kind of being a multiplayer-focused game that not many people tune into.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. I'll probably check out that open beta and see just what it is, but it seems like they're going to support cross-platform matchmaking. As well as having all the exosuits in that open beta. And people that play that beta will get a special metal charm for use in the full game. So there you go. It's the game that people thought would be Dino Crisis, but it is completely unlike whatever you would have won out of a Dino Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But it has a silly premise of dinosaurs raining out of the sky as a... like it's a weather thing. So there you go for that. And then, next up here, we finally got a date for one of the biggest games of the year that was supposed to be one of the biggest games of last year, Starfield, that Microsoft announced like a year and a half ahead that they were going to launch it in November of last year. And then at a certain point, it was like, yeah, we're not going to hit that at all. So we're going to delay it to... The following year, they were hoping to get it out the first half of this year, but that came and went, and now they've announced a date of September 9th or September 6th. And yeah, they're going to have a Starfield Direct in, June 11th. that will have a sort of deep dive into the game and all of its features and all that, which I guess will be happening after the whatever E3 show they're going to have. So that could be a big day for them. So I'm assuming it's on that same day. So yeah, there you go. Starfield finally maybe hit this time. I'll have to see if that is a good launch for them or if it's going to be like the past few big games for them. It's pretty rough at launch.
Yeah, I'm I really want to play this, but I'm probably going to wait on it a little bit. Because Bethesda games, even when they're good, come out extremely buggy at release. So, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be on Game Pass, so people can check it out on day one and experience all of the potential bugs and all that for themselves.
Yep.
Just as a tip, just make sure you save early and often. And like do multiple saves. Just avoid any way that you can, you know, work yourself into a bad save state. So yeah, I'm curious to see sort of what this extra time is brought to the game. Because at least they're not in a Halo Infinite situation where they revealed the game and everybody told them that it looked terrible and they had to scramble and delay it a good bit of time to get it to a decent state. But yeah, we got some new stuff that got announced here. This one is the Lamplighters League. Paradox Interactive had an event announcing a bunch of stuff, and this was the one that was the most interesting. It's coming to Xbox and PC. That is a game from Harebrained Schemes. And it's basically, what if you took XCOM and put it in the world of Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. I think it's set in like the 1930s.
Like, it's not subtle.
Yeah.
It's very clearly inspired by Indiana Jones.
Yeah, and this is a developer of renown. They made the recent Shadowrun trilogy as well as the Battletech game, which was a big deal for people like their mech strategy games. And so, yeah, they're going for a little bit of a different style here, but looks really neat for what they have here. And definitely could be a cool game. No date for it, just sometime later this year. So I'm curious to see how they do with this game. And also be on Game Pass as well at launch. So that's another reason it's only on Xbox.
Right.
Yeah, there's that. And then there's The Legend of Nayuta, Boundless Trails, the latest game that's going to be released in the Trails series. That is finally coming to the West this fall. No dates. But they are letting you spend a bunch of money on the NIS America online store.
Yeah.
You can put down $90 now for the limited edition.
Yeah.
That includes the deluxe edition of the game, a 2-disc original soundtrack, hardcover art book, acrylic figure of Nayuta and Noir, bookmark, lenticular sleeve, and a collector's box.
Yeah. And this is like the sort of odd duck, the Trails. It doesn't really have any relation to the mainline Trails games. Sort of. Supposedly, well, I won't spoil it, but it may be or it may not be. But either way, it's supposed to be a pretty good game either way. It plays more like an East game than a Trails game.
Yeah. I was actually going to mention that. I'm pretty sure it takes place in like the same universe, if anything, but it appears to have no relation to any of the Trails games prior to it. That being said, as Brandon mentioned, it plays more like a Trails game, but I'd even take it a step further and say it probably plays like a lot more like the Zui game, which also some of Falcom's solid entries into the action RPG genre. That being said, this one actually, as far as looks go, like it's definitely one of the more impressive uses of the 2D art style that they've had in the series, and I'm definitely looking forward to trying it out. The limited edition honestly seems kind of lame, but I do have all of them, so I spent money on this. But if anything, my main complaint out of all of these limited editions is that they all don't, I actually complain about this in the panel. And these have no consistency as far as, like, you know, displaying them properly. But yeah, it is what it is, and I'm part of the problem.
Yep. So yeah, that'll be launching on PS4, Switch, and PC this fall. Technically, it's already out on Steam, but it's Japanese language only. So you can get that now and just fumble your way through it, not understanding anything that's going on. And I guess if it's maybe not story-wise tied too directly into the other games, you might not be missing much. You just may not know exactly what you're going and what's expected of you. But I'm sure there are guides out there for people that really need that information. So yeah, there you go. And yeah, it looks like the Suicide Squad game that we talked about last week or 2 weeks ago in the state of play has been delayed, reportedly, to sometime later this year because of the negative backlash that has caused them to delay it and rethink some things. I don't know. There's no details, particularly like what they are going to rework. It's going to be like the online functionality, anything like that. That I think if you're only delaying it till, you know, a few more months, they're not going to be able to make any big changes to like the loot stuff or any of that. So I don't know exactly what that would entail. And yeah, WB has not put out any sort of big statement about this. So who knows? But yeah, definitely seems like at this point, do not put down any money for this game just yet.
Yeah. I did see somebody who, the one issue they said they had too much like Fortnite to them, or at least looked like it played too much like Fortnite. I don't know.
I didn't see anything.
But in general,
like,
I think part of the issue is the game doesn't really, from what we've shown, the game doesn't really have the kind of, I guess, tone or charm or whatever that the Arkham series had, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know that I would expect that out of Suicide Squad. It's always been a little more cheeky.
Yeah, but because it comes from Rocksteady, you know.
Yeah. But I think people would have been annoyed if it played just like the Batman Arkham games.
Probably.
So it's like, I don't know how they would have won in this situation. Especially because it's a Suicide Squad game. It's not, you know, a Superman or Flash game or anything of the big heroes. So there's that segment of the casual DC gaming fans that are like, why is Rocksteady working on Suicide Squad? And so, yeah. I don't know if there was any way they were going to come out of this looking great to people. So, yeah, curious to see if there's an official confirmation of this and sort of what the additional work would be on this game. So, yeah, it's Rocksteady. I would expect good things from them. Versus like what Gotham Knights looked like in the year leading up to its launch. So, yeah. There you go. Suicide Squad. Probably won't be out in May. Let's see. A game that did come out, Grim Guardians Demon Purge. Seems like it's going to get its name changed because of a complaint from the owners of the trademark Grimguard. That is a mobile game. I think it's like a strategy mobile game, something like that. Weird that they kind of got all the way to releasing this game and then getting a complaint about this. This seems like that'll be changing that name to, what is it here? Gal Guardians Demon Purge. To change it a little bit to make it more like the Galgun influence that the two main characters are from. But yeah, it's a little bit weird. This seems like it'll be happening for the US, European Union, UK, Australia, and New Zealand. Because of the complaint from the developers of Grimguard in those specific countries.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think that's... I think this is a game that has like any sort of huge audience to it that is going to make this a big deal, but it's kind of wild to see that. I think the last time we've had anything like this was Trenched, Double Fine's Trenched, that got a challenge to the name because of a board game named Trench, and they ended up changing it to Iron Brigade. So, yeah, still a weird situation, but they'll make it through just fine.
Yeah.
But yeah. Speaking of strategy games, there's one getting a sequel here, Wargroove. Wargroove 2 was announced. Publisher Chucklefish announced it for the Switch and PC. No date or anything, but they put out an announcement trailer so you can see some of it in action. But Wargroove was a cool game because it seemed like it had the gameplay of Advanced Wars, but more of the style of like a Fire Emblem. You're controlling like individual people as your units versus, you know, military vehicles, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's basically Advanced Wars, but fantasy, more or less.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's what the game was essentially made to be, because it's Advanced Wars is, you know, there was an Advanced Wars game that was supposed to come out recently, and that didn't happen because of a certain war that's going on right now.
Yeah, though that'll be out next month.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's Fantasy Advanced Wars. It's what it is. And I loved the first one. The first one was a lot of fun.
Yeah. But yeah, that is going to be out sometime. I don't even think they committed to a year. Just it exists. It'll release at some point. Who knows? But yeah, they're going to have four-player co-op and versus battles, along with role customization and asynchronous play, as well as an in-game editor, so you can create custom maps, campaigns, even cutscenes to share with other players. So that's cool to see. And then, yeah, our last couple of stories here. This happened like right before our recording last week at an esports event. Bandai Namco announced a new Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi game. They had a trailer here that shows like a nice looking Goku, a little bit of footage of one of the old games, and then shows like Goku in widescreen pulling up into Super Saiyan Blue as it says, "Get ready for battle. A new Budokai Tenkaichi begins," or Sparking if it's the Japanese version, because they had different names for the different regions. But yeah, that's interesting, a big deal. I think I would have been more interested if it was just a Budokai game. That's sort of the precursor of Dragon Ball Z games getting good. As you had the 2D sides, not side scroll, but 2D, 3D games, fighting games with that stuff that were published by Atari, just in case you're wondering where the licensing was back then in the early 2000s. Atari and Infogrames published those games. But yeah, now it's Bandai Namco, and they're going to do a new one of those. But the Budokai Tenkaichi are the fighting games that are sort of behind the back fighting games, which I don't think I enjoyed as much as the 2D fighters. So, but there's a lot of people that have nostalgia for those games, and that'll be fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, like Dragon Ball, I mean, obviously it's done a lot for anime, but because of that, it's at this weird spot where they have so many fighting games and of so many different kinds. Tenkaichi was one that really resonated with like more of the actual fighting game community fanatic, but at the same time, it's like now that we have Dragon Ball FighterZ, yeah, you wonder how useful it even is. But yeah, I'm gonna assume that Bandai Namco knows who their audience is here, and hopefully it's cool and not awkward as the last two entries were. And even if they are, again, hopefully Arc System Works can help out with another addition to the FighterZ series. But yeah, this should be good news. I don't hate the Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, these games were pretty neat, especially because I think by the time they got to like the third game, they were basically throwing everything they could into them as far as, you know, every character they could think of, as well as I think that third one might have had even mechanics for fusing many different characters that never got fused in the original series. Because at that point, you know, all of it had come out. And so it's just a matter of, you know, coming up with new things to do with that stuff. But yeah, they've done a lot of fighting games. Fighters is a bit of a different beast because that is a tag fighter. It's 3v3 fighting, whereas this is more one-on-one for that. So, yeah, they've even had like the Street Fighter guy make a Dragon Ball Z fighting game back in the PS2 era. So they've tried a lot on that stuff. But yeah, there you go. More Dragon Ball Z fighting games.
Yeah.
Though those Budokai Tenkaichi got repurposed to do more fighting games on the 360, even the Kinect game was basically a Budokai Tenkaichi and just not in name.
Yep. Pretty much.
Which is why it was terrible.
Mm.
But yes, last story here, we got some bad news. Linceworks, studio behind the Origami franchise of Ninja Stealth action games, has announced it will be shutting down in April. Seems like the big issue was just either not being able to, you know, get anybody to sign them for new projects they were pitching, or yeah, funding, that kind of stuff. So they announced they will be shutting down here. And yeah, stopping the development of new projects indefinitely. So that's a shame to see. But yeah, I guess Origami 2 did not do super well, and their Game Pass deal was not enough to keep them solvent for a while after that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But yeah, they did mention they had a bunch of stuff in the works. Just seems like nobody picked them up to fund those projects, so it's kind of the way that things go if you do not have any takers for your wares. So sad to see, but hopefully those people are able to find new jobs or form new studios that can find, you know, a new path forward for themselves.
Yeah, hopefully.
So I did some good work with those games, just they weren't anything amazing to really stand out amongst all the other indie games out there, which is part of the tough part of the indie industry, as there's a lot of good work coming out all the time. It's hard to stand out. So yeah, there you go. Linceworks did some good work, but unfortunately the people there will have to find new places to work. So, yep. And yeah, that'll do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danra for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back with a new slate of news next week and some new games to talk about, as we've got more of March going on. It'll be St. Patrick's Day on Friday, so all the deviants will be able to party during the weekend. So that's a thing to be careful about if you go out and about on Friday.
Yes, please drink responsibly.
Yep, cops will be out and about.
Seriously, yeah. And I'm not really just talking it for safety reasons. I just, for your own personal reputation. I've seen far too many people who get too drunk and then do really stupid shit.
Yeah. Also, don't call off if you work a day shift on St. Patrick's Day. Like, that's stupid. You don't need to
seriously.
Like, pre-game you're drinking.
Seriously.
Like, you can work in the morning. It's fine.
It's a dick thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a wild thing to see. It was like, what are you doing on St. Patrick's Day that requires you to be calling off on a morning shift?
Yeah.
But yeah, that is That is it. If you enjoy the show, for people to let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers.
Mm-hmm.
They won't drink and drive on St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time.